With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, hello, and welcome, or should I say welcome back to the Indie Football Podcast. I am Ed Mallion, as ever, sports editor of The Independent, and today I am flanked by two of my most trusty lieutenants. To my left, Jack Pitbrook, returning from a week of, I would say holiday, but annual leave is probably more appropriate.
Yeah, I didn't go very far.
What we call a staycation, I believe. Yeah. You got a lot done?
Not really. I went to go and see Roma for a second time. It's much better on the cinema than on Netflix. If you can, please watch it in the cinema.
Anything else? Any other Oscar favourites?
I didn't see any other films this week. Oh no, I saw the favourite a few weeks ago.
Any good?
Yeah, I liked it. It was funny. I think it loses a bit of structure in the second half, a bit like The Lobster. And that was it, really. I kind of tried to do as little as possible and succeeded.
Who's your favourite for Best Picture?
Roma, definitely.
Roma, for sure. And to my right, far less cultured, but nonetheless still a valuable part of the team, it is our man about Arsenal Town, Luke Brown.
Hello, how are you, Ed?
I'm glad you asked. I'm absolutely fine. How are you on this cold Monday morning?
Yeah, I'm okay, thank you. I've been working all weekend. Worked a lot last week as well, so probably need a day off soon.
It's almost as if sport happens at weekends, and that is what happens when you take this job. You were at probably the biggest game of the weekend. Arsenal-Chelsea, you know, probably a bit too big a game for you perhaps, but you managed it. So what's the big, you know, upshot of the weekend? We looked at that game, and I think most of us thought it would be kind of tight going into it. Arsenal come away with the win. Chelsea, what the Spanish would call like tocado, like a bit. They're a bit hurt by that because it seemed to be a bit of a setback for the Maurizio Sarri era. Is that fair?
I think so, but I mean, it was more his reaction to the performance, wasn't it? Because it was a bad performance anyway, especially against an Arsenal side that are incredibly inconsistent, and against West Ham, literally the weekend before, I think that was probably their worst performance of the season. So they were definitely there for the taking. But yeah, Sarri was absolutely furious afterwards and came into the press conference, said that he wasn't going to speak in English because he wanted to kind of get his words exactly right, and then just basically laid into his players, said that their attitude was completely wrong, said that he doesn't know how he can motivate them.
Which seems like a problem.
Yeah, well, yeah, and it's all quite weird because fundamentally they lost because of the system they played, and, you know, Chelsea's flaws were very much like his flaws in that game.
Explain to us what you mean by that. Why do they lose because of the system Maurizio Sarri put
out? Because whenever Chelsea don't play well, it's generally because Jorginho gets completely destroyed on and off the ball. So Arsenal just set up in a way where Ramsey could just kind of hurtle around the pitch, chasing it.
You think they're too easy just to play against, basically?
Yeah, potentially, yeah. And obviously it doesn't really help like when you've only got Hazard as your centre forward. And the amount of times he picked up the ball, looked up, scanned the pitch, and there was just nobody in front of him. You know, he was so visibly frustrated. So I'm not really sure how much of that is the player's fault. Like, Sarri definitely needs to accept some criticism there.
We expect Chelsea to look different by the end of the month anyway, with Gonzalo Higuain kind of metaphorically sat on the runway waiting for the, I guess, it's for the things to fall. So Christoph Piatek, who's Higuain's replacement in Milan, essentially, has signed now. That's official, I believe. So we're waiting for Alvaro Morata to move to Atletico Madrid, for which Atletico, as we reported like 10 days ago, need to clear a little bit of wage bill room. They still haven't managed to get out either Nikola Kalinic or Gelson Martins or any of the other kind of recent signings that have failed to clear up some salary space. When they do, Morata goes out on loan to Atletico Madrid, Higuain comes in at Chelsea. It might be the sort of change they need, Jack, looking at what we've seen.
Maybe, although I kind of get the impression that Chelsea's, from what Sarri was saying, that Chelsea's problems are more ingrained than can be solved by adding another striker. Like the way that he spoke about the players suggests there is like that he really doesn't feel as if the players are picking up on what he's teaching them at all, and he needs to raise the stakes by calling out their mentality like this, in a way which is a huge risk for any manager to do.
Like, it's kind of a Conte move.
It is a bit of a Conte move. Well, like lots, of, you know, plenty of Chelsea. There's a long list of Chelsea managers in the Abramovich era who have gone to war with the dressing room and lost. Like Conte. Conte's probably one of the only few who challenged the players and won. But ultimately, like, you've got to win the title or you're going to get sacked, really, if you go to war with the dressing room like that.
They're not looking like winning the title. I was at Fulham Spurs yesterday where, until the absolute last kick of the game, essentially, it looked like we were going to have a bit of a 14 mini-league, essentially, for the final two Champions League spots. It doesn't quite look like that now. United are in sixth on 44 points. Arsenal, who were, what, 8 clear of them not so long ago, are now level on them on points in 5th place with 44. Chelsea are the right side of the Champions League line on 47, and Spurs on 51.
But Spurs do have probably the hardest run-in of those teams. I think they've still got to go to the Etihad, still got to go to the Bridge, Anfield as well. So I definitely think Spurs are going to drop points.
Well, they, I mean, did you saw the game yesterday, Spurs Fulham?
Yep.
Let's segue smoothly into that one. I didn't really get the impression that, you know, I wrote after the game that this is a team that you can sometimes see, and we've discussed this on the podcast as well with you, Jack, because you see a lot of Tottenham. 4.5 years into Pochettino's reign there, they're kind of at times a self-automated sort of team. And for my piece for this morning, which is already online, you can read about, there was one moment where Kieran Trippier got the ball well in the Fulham half, and he looks up and he's looking for Llorente in the box. You know, they did try everything yesterday to put into place a system around Fernando Llorente where he could thrive. So they played the three at the back, five at the back, whichever way you want to see it. So they had these kind of crosses coming in from deep. They had Dele Alli and Eric Lamela trying to play as close to him as possible so that you gave him some help. It didn't really work because Llorente's so static and he's so sluggish, really, that nothing really works. There's a point where Trippier looks there, he wants to swing the cross in, and Alderweireld is staring at him, and he just points back at Jan Vertonghen and screams at him. And Trippier, like a naughty school kid, kind of turns around and passes the ball back. And they know what they're supposed to do, even when the occasional kind of impulse tells them not to do it.
That's interesting, because I think Spurs probably played their best football at the Pochettino era, playing the back three. This was back in 2016-17, mm-hmm. where they played basically a sort of 3-4-2-1 with Alli and Eriksen in the hole just behind Kane. And they were fantastic. And even, I mean, I wasn't at the game yesterday, I was only watching the highlights, but even watching the highlights with the three centre-backs and then Rose and Trippier pushed all the way up, it did look a little bit, in shape terms, like the 2016-17 team. Of course, like, the big argument against doing that is Son, and it's been the success of Son, I think, in part, which is as well as the problems they've had at fullback, which has forced them back into the sort of 4-2-3-1. But I do think the back three is, like, not something that Spurs should completely disown. I do think it's, like, it can be very, very, very effective for them. And particularly, like you say, without Kane, they're going to have to find a slightly different approach. I think this is probably the right one.
And plus, it covers up the numerous flaws of Kieran Trippier, who probably shouldn't even be starting matches anymore, but is still picked week
well,
in, week
out by
Poch. Well,
I know this is a little bugbear of yours that you think Serge Aurier should be starting over.
Or Carl Walker-Peters, who wasn't even named on the bench.
Carl Walker-Peters.
Do you think Walker-Peters is better than Trippier?
I'm not sure if he's...
Is this someone getting carried away with the young kid? Are you getting
no, because I mean,
away?
Serge Aurier should be playing ahead of Trippier anyway. And if not, I would say Walker-Peters. I mean, especially when you...
What do you do with Trippier then? Sell him for like 60 mil while his value is still high?
Yeah, potentially. I mean...
United have been interested in Trippier, sort of on and off. I mean, there was talk last summer of a move to United, and I wouldn't be super shocked if that were to come back as
Antonio Valencia's contract runs out at the end of the season.
Yeah,
that's
like
worth
United,
monitoring.
United certainly need an injection of pace at right back.
They need fullbacks on both sides this summer.
Well,
right?
It's like they have kept Shaw, so I wonder whether Shaw might yet be savable. Whereas I think Trippier would be.
Well, he got a big new contract, did he not?
Yeah, right. So that's why I think they won't go for left back. But I do think that right. I mean, right back's been a problem position for United for years, really. And I do think Trippier could be like an obvious solution to that. I think there has been interest in the past from United. I think there's been interest from Trippier's end as well. So that would be one to keep half an eye on.
And if they can promote Walker-Peters, then it's one of those where you make a lot of money that you could spend elsewhere, perhaps in finally bringing in a backup striker, because almost for the entire Pochettino reign, they've struggled with this.
As someone who was at the game yesterday, would you say Llorente's performance is the worst you can remember for Spurs? Like, he gave the ball away.
It wasn't just me who thought that, right? You were watching it.
I honestly can't remember a worse individual Spurs performance than that.
I'm glad someone else feels like that, because I thought it was utterly dire. I really, really kind of wondered if this would work, you know, at the start. And then Fulham score a freak goal, and obviously it has to be Llorente who scores the own goal. Fulham basically couldn't create anything. And Spurs, I got the impression that Spurs knew that without Kane to create chances and without Son to create chances, because, you know, they're not just guys who finish chances, they are guys who create them for themselves. Without those two, you felt as if they might... They were ramping it up a little bit. They were playing the entire game in Fulham's half. Like, all of the, you know, they were playing five at the back, yes, but all five of those defenders had pushed into the Fulham half, and they were trying to dominate play, and they were getting players around. You know, Ali and Lamella were right behind and around Llorente, trying to help him as much as humanly possible. The width was coming from Rose, who did pretty well, I think, especially in the second half, and Trippier. And then still there was nothing. There was absolutely nothing there for Llorente. He couldn't create a chance, let alone anything. But he had no respect from defenders. The Llorente, you remember, was a kind of a big physical specimen who caused problems for defenders because he was physical, and he had a bit of nous about him, a bit of experience, and kind of, he was wily almost. They just stood off him and they let him have 5 yards, because as soon as the ball came to him, you could shut down that 5 yards in seconds, and he's not going to do anything to hurt you. He's not going to get the ball out of his feet and shoot. He's not going to play a cute pass to someone like and thread Dele Alli through. There was no threat level with Llorente in there at all. But you knew after the game, especially when they win it, you know, I wonder if they hadn't scored that second goal, if it would have been the same. But Poch came in and was lauding Llorente and saying,
yeah,
it was a really good performance. And so it wasn't a really good performance. We all saw it. It was pretty poor. But he said it was really good. He was really happy. And then immediately dropped, without being questioned about it, that Lucas Moura had trained yesterday at the training ground and was likely to be fit for Chelsea, bench or start. So I got the impression then that they might not dip into the transfer market. There's no interest in Jared Bowen or Malcolm from Barcelona and Hull, respectively, who we think could have come in. So now you're looking at it and you're saying, if they get Lucas Moura back as their kind of next step, and then after that they get Son back, and then after that they get Kane back, it's Daniel Levy's perfect thing. We don't need to go and spend any money.
I think Pochettino was right to play the system he played yesterday. I think he was right to play Llorente, especially with Lucas out injured. But the other big plan, which Poch spoke about, because he was away in Barcelona,
was playing
before
the kid?
No, it was playing Dele Alli as a false nine, which he said when he went to Barca for a bit of downtime, he watched Messi and had that plan. And obviously with Alli now suffering what looked to be a reasonably bad muscular injury, that plan's completely
gone. He didn't know the extent of it after the game. But
it's going to be one of the big things, I think, in the next few days is that Alli scan, and that from there figuring out exactly what resources Spurs have for the Chelsea, because they've got Chelsea on Thursday in the Carabao Cup semi-final second leg, which is a huge game. Like,
what's the score from the first leg?
They've got a 1-0 lead.
1-0 lead.
I thought they were not great in that first leg, but they dug in. I think they're playing at Chelsea at a good time because Chelsea is such a mess at the moment. That's on the flip side, we could be facing a big kind of Chelsea reaction. The players might want to prove Sarri wrong. But if Spurs can dig out a result, then they're back in the League Cup final for their first final since the 2015 League Cup final. So that would be a huge...
And Poch, who's never won a trophy, as we've heard so many times.
Probably up against City. So that would be a huge thing for the club if they could make it into that game.
Mm-hmm.
It's a far more important match than Palace away in the fourth round of the FA Cup.
Where both teams will probably play fringe
players. This Sunday afternoon, I think Spurs would be pretty relaxed about going out of the FA Cup, given that what they've got on in the Premier League and the Champions League. But you're right, going into that Thursday night game, I think they might have to go with Llorente and Lucas, perhaps, as the front two. I hope they stick with the back three, which I think is much better for them. And also in central midfield, like, yesterday they had to have, Winks and Eriksen as the midfield two.
Well, so you had...
Winks was pretty much the only man left in midfield.
Yeah. You had Llorente with with Alli and Lamella either side of him, and then the actual midfield was Winks and Eriksen.
Well, I was delighted to see Winks get the goal, because he's played an awful lot recently. I did think he was looking a little bit leggy, a week or two ago, but he worked very hard yesterday.
It came from nowhere as well. Poch said that he had asked him, you know, he said, I need you to score more goals. He said that this week.
Yeah, well, it's fantastic that he's managed to reward him with that, because I'm hoping he can have a big second half of the season. Because one more thing on that, the Spurs formation is that back in the good old days of 2016-17, when they played that 3-4-2-1, one of the things that made it tick is they had Dembele and Wanyama in the middle, who were such a huge physical presence, they could basically give everyone else the license to go and attack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had basically five attacking players with the front three and the two wing-backs. Whereas now Dembele's playing in China and Wanyama is seemingly finished with his knee problem. And now Spurs don't have that same kind of presence, particularly with Sissoko out injured and Dier just coming back from appendicitis. And that puts even more pressure on guys like Winks to kind of step up and fill that space in the middle of the pitch.
It's incredible how there's been so much focus on Tottenham keeping hold of the obvious players, Kane, Dele, Eriksen, that almost without kind of everybody realising, that incredibly successful team just melted away. You've got Dembele's left, Wanyama's perpetually injured, the fullbacks. I mean, Danny Rose isn't the same player. Walker's gone.
He's not the same player, but he made a couple of key contributions yesterday, I thought, Danny Rose. He isn't perhaps as... I don't know, he's not as explosive as he was. I think he's just lost.
I don't think Rose has been as explosive since that knee injury he got 2 years ago,
yeah,
which put him out for about 6 months. Because that was before that knee injury. So we're looking now at January 2017, so right at the peak of that, when... Do you remember that famous game when Spurs beat Chelsea 2-0 at White Hart Lane? That was playing this sort of 3-4-2-1. That was probably one of the best Spurs performances I've ever seen. But that was like peak Rose. Mm-hmm. And it was at the end of that month, January 2017, 2 years ago, that Rose picked up that knee injury, which is kind of like, at first it was bruising, and then they had that classic thing where they thought it would go away with injections, and then it didn't, and then they didn't want to have surgery, and then eventually they had surgery. But I kind of feel like, even though Rose is currently playing pretty well, and recently he started 3 games in a row for the first time since the injury, he doesn't quite have that same explosiveness or that ability to play at a very, very high physical standard, like 2 or 3 times a week, that he did in the kind of good old days of Danny Rose.
Do you think it's interesting that he's still at Spurs, given that outburst he had before the World Cup?
I do think it's interesting. I think it's most interesting in the sense that he very nearly went, like, after he did that famous interview with The Sun, so this is summer 2017,
mm-hmm,
like, at the end of that transfer window, he did very nearly go to Chelsea. Like, Spurs and Chelsea were haggling over a price, and they weren't that far away. We would have been in the region sort of 50, 55 million. Whereas last summer, Rose was one of the players that Spurs were trying to sell, and the price, it was a weird situation for Spurs, because usually Levy is the one doing the hard bargaining, whereas last year, because the pressure was on Levy to sell Wanyama, Sissoko, Alderweireld, Rose to generate money to spend on players, Spurs were trying to sell their players, and they were trying to sell Rose, and the price was coming down from like 50 million to, you know, less than half of that. And then even then they still couldn't sell him. They tried to loan him to like PSG and Schalke, and even that didn't happen. But he's still there. And so it was never in anyone's plan for Rose to still be at Tottenham. But the fact is that he's knuckled down, done really, really well this year.
He was so interesting after the League Cup game against Arsenal at the Emirates. And Rose captained Spurs. Spurs obviously won. Comes to the mix zone afterwards. And from what he was saying, you just get the impression Poch is such a good manager for him. Because apparently in the summer they had a sit-down chat with each other. And Pochettino just straightly, kind of directly told him, you're wasting your time. You know, you need to sort it out, and there's a place for you here, but you need to start fighting for your place in the team and not stop agitating for a move away. And Rose has just responded so well to that and has kind of started working hard again and has put everything in the past. And he's an incredibly direct person. He doesn't really seem the sort to kind of like bear a grudge too much. You know, he's just getting on with his job, and he is a better option than Ben Davis. And I think if he can stay fit, he's clearly a first choice player.
And somebody, a source close to the dressing room, said that he was really surprised by how close the Pochettino-Rose relationship was again, given everything that's happened and Rose's outburst and Tottenham trying to sell him and all that kind of sense that he was being a bit victimised after the outburst, when he was like, Pochettino kept on dropping him for big games, saying he wasn't fit enough. You know, it was really, really, it wasn't great between them, whereas now it's really good again. Which I think goes to show, like, you know, they've obviously both, they've managed to rediscover a bit of that sort of relationship that was so strong in the first place.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I don't want this to turn into Spurs hour, so we should move on. The other game yesterday was Huddersfield-Manchester City. As expected, Man City win comfortably there, top of the table. No, they're not. They are...
If only.
We all wish.
They are 4 points behind Liverpool. We wish is an interesting point. I'll get onto that in a second. Huddersfield changed their manager this week. They sacked David Wagner, and they are about to bring in Jan Sievert, we believe, the Dortmund second team manager, which is essentially just a pipeline to a Premier League job now. Huddersfield changing managers, Jack, have you got a view on that? I think we have discussed them as being a team that, you know, already have way overachieved by even being in the Premier League and staying in the Premier League. What do you think the future kind of has in store for David Wagner? Because I think his future is more interesting possibly than Huddersfield's right now.
Oh yeah. I like which of David Wagner, like David Wagner is approximately a million times more likely than Huddersfield to be in the Premier League in on a sort of 3 to 5 year view.
And that's maths.
Yeah, that is. I've got a GCSE in there.
Yeah.
Huddersfield have a terrible squad, let's be honest.
Yeah.
I literally haven't heard of half their players, and this is my job.
It's great. It's trying to get people to name the Huddersfield starting 11 from their last game is a great quiz.
I could do it, because it's like, you know, Florent Pratcher, Hadi Gonaj, Aaron Moy, Elias Kachunga, Lursel,
Rajiv Van La Parra,
all these legends. And yet yesterday, when the team flashed up, I was like, who the hell are these guys? So yeah, they are. I'm sure they'll go down. It's a miracle. As I think I tweeted this the other day. It was like they're probably the worst squad ever to get promoted into the Prem, with the possible exception of Paul Jules Derby.
Blackpool, man. Yeah, that Blackpool team was poor.
And then I'd say they are like level with that Blackpool team as being the worst team ever to stay up. But even that Blackpool team,
DJ Campbell,
Charlie Adam, DJ Campbell, David Vaughan, Gary Taylor Fletcher.
Yeah,
so there's one possible Premier League player in that. Charlie Adam might
DJ
be
Campbell
a Premier League
player. Like 13 goals or something.
Deadly at the near post.
So DJ Campbell has never proven himself as a Premier League player. Brett Ormerod, no. Gary Taylor Fletcher, no. David Vaughan has a good championship career. David Vaughan had a good championship career. But Charlie Adam is the only one there who spent years in the Premier League, like actually as an actual Premier League player.
David Vaughan spent a while in the Prem at Sunderland when he left.
Yeah, but he spent most of his career at Forest or where else was he? Crewe at the start?
I can't actually name any of the defenders or goalkeepers of that Blackpool team. Mm.
Chris Basham. They had Ian Evatt at centre-back. I can't even remember who the goalkeeper was. I'm looking at the bottom of the table now. Huddersfield are 10 points.
I'm still going to stick with my original point that Blackpool team was slightly better than this Huddersfield team.
That is insulting to the current Huddersfield team, which only have...
The Premier League is worse as well, I think.
That is fair. They've got 11 points.
Name me one good Huddersfield player.
Steve Mounier.
No.
Aaron Moy. I think Moy's good. I think Moy will find a Premier League. Moy will find a Premier League club like David Wagner next season.
But the fact that, like, on back to the Wagner point, like Wagner to do what he did with these players is really, really good. He's obviously a very good coach.
Let me work my way down the Premier League, and you tell me if you would take David Wagner in the summer as a replacement of your current manager. In seventh place, Watford.
Why not? Yeah.
Wolves.
Well, no, because I think Nuno will stay.
Leicester.
Yes.
That, to me, that's the one that I keep an eye on.
That's Van Sweeten saying, let's get Sackpool, get Wagner in.
Claude Puel has this weird way that he just jades every fan base he ever works for.
Yeah, and all players. It's weird because the results
they all hate him.
Like, not that bad, and yet
Sunderland, at, sorry, both Saints and Leicester have had exactly the same thing, which is like, we can't have this.
It's a chronic boredom, yeah.
Sapping the energy out of our club anymore.
West Ham.
Yeah, we will come back to this.
I think Pellegrini's a better coach, but yes. Everton.
Maybe. I know, they've got to stick with Magic Marco.
Depends where Magic Marco is on your fraud rankings. Bournemouth.
Conceivably. If
yeah, if Eddie Howe moved on, you could see it. Brighton.
Somewhere. I can't see them.
I'm going to give that a hard no. Going to give that a hard no. Crystal Palace.
Why not? Yeah, go for it.
You know, if Roy's ready to... it's a very kind of staid environment around Palace at the moment. Southampton.
No.
You've only ever supported Big Ralph. Yeah, yeah. Big win for them. Burnley.
Can't say it.
If Dyche moves on, possibly. And Newcastle are now 2 points clear of the drop zone.
That's a so Rafa's contract is up at the end of the summer, and if Rafa walks...
Why would he sign a new deal right now?
Right, and if Rafa walks and Ashley's thinking, well, how can I get some miracle worker to keep this championship level squad in the Prem?
Yeah, yeah.
On a budget,
I see
who
it.
Won't want a lot of salary, then Wagner's the man.
He
would never take it, surely. Why would you?
Huge job.
Why would you?
Load of money, big club.
Especially with the stresses he's been dealing with at Huddersfield,
which are completely different.
I'd argue it's a better...
That's quite similar.
If you go from Huddersfield manager to Newcastle manager, you're moving up in the world.
Yeah,
yeah, sure. You're moving up in the world, but you're still working with like the exact same constrictions.
I don't know.
And like you're kind of ceiling for success.
Well, it looks like surprise, that takeover is on the rocks again.
You've always got that. I guess I don't know. I think it's a really that would be a really big thing for Wagner to do, Newcastle.
But what realistically would he be able to achieve there apart from keep them up? That is the only thing he could do, which is the same as Huddersfield.
I guess maybe think...
Win a cup.
What if...
Newcastle, win a cup? Are you kidding me?
To win a cup. But I do think he might think, well, what if a takeover happens in 2 years' time? And what if I'm suddenly in the right place at the right time? Or even just continue to burnish his reputation in such a way that he can get a big job in Germany.
It's a bit like the Poch effect. When you do have these limited resources, I kind of alluded to that in my piece as well. You know, the fact that... If Spurs don't go into the market for a striker this month, you know, because...
What, you're comparing Spurs?
No, listen.
I'm so against it.
Listen, Llorente yesterday, you're watching his performance, and you're like, there is no way that there's no player on the market available on loan or for transfer who is not better than Fernando Llorente. That's what you're saying watching yesterday's performance, right? I still feel Spurs will not go into the market because of a variety of reasons. Like we said, Lucas coming back, Son coming back, Kane eventually coming back. And the fact that they don't necessarily have a load of money to spend, and the fact they don't seem to want to spend a lot of money, and it's not the way they tend to do things. So add all those up, right? And then you're looking at it like, okay, they're not going to buy a striker. It's annoying because Daniel Levy's not doing it. Whatever. But Pochettino kind of has a human shield there, where he can say, you know, down the line he can say, I wanted a striker and we didn't get one. Right now, he might want a striker, but he knows he's not going to get one. That's fine. It's when you have the limited resources, like Rafa. Like, Rafa gets a 0-0 draw away from home, and he is lauded because he's got scant resources with which to work. So, I think that if Wagner, for example, went to Newcastle at the end of the season and didn't have a load of money to spend and kept them up, he would be treated the same way. Do you think that's fair, Jack?
Maybe.
Yeah.
One thing I want to say on Wagner and West Ham is that I know that West Ham interviewed Wagner.
They were interested before, right?
In, like, when they still had Bilic, so uh-huh. Sort of 2016-ish. This was when they were thinking of sacking Bilic.
Well-run like, club.
6 months before they did. And they got Marco Silva and David Wagner in for interviews to just for a kind of chat about the possibility of getting them in. And apparently, in this kind of informal chat they had with Wagner, the person who asked him the most questions was Jack Sullivan.
Yeah, yeah. That's how I'd want it, yeah.
And at that point, Wagner was like, you know what, I'm going to sit with Huddersfield Town.
Yeah. Things did change at the bottom because Newcastle beat Cardiff 3-0. So Newcastle leapfrogged Cardiff out of the relegation zone. That's a significant result down there, but also kind of, I think, more reflective of what we've seen this season. Newcastle do, to me, look a better side than Cardiff. Other results on Saturday, big win for Ralph Hampton, as you say, against Magic Marco's waning Everton. Watford 0, Burnley 0, Arsenal 2, Chelsea 0, which we discussed. Man United 2, Brighton 1. Anyone have any thoughts on that?
Apparently Rashford's goal is good, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's a nice finish. Liverpool 4, Crystal Palace 3. was one of 2-4-3s on Saturday. Wolves beat Leicester 4-3 and Bournemouth beat West Ham 2-0. Liverpool, I wanted to mention, just because of that point that you said, Luke, Liverpool becomes self-aware. Jurgen Klopp on Friday acknowledging that there are lots of people who don't want his team to win the Premier League this year. And, like, you know, they kind of came close to screwing things up again against Crystal Palace on Saturday. They were behind. Andros Townsend scored the first goal there. They were level. They ended up winning. They're 4 points clear, but they don't look to be the purring attacking machine that they were before. They're a bit more leaky at the back. The gap is 4 points. At this point, who are you saying is going to win the title?
I still think Liverpool will win. I still think the gap is big enough. Plus, I think they've got the hardest Champions League, well, the harder Champions League draw out of Liverpool and City, which could potentially work to their advantage
if they get knocked out.
Yeah, I mean, Bayern Munich obviously aren't quite the same team they were, but it's not inconceivable that Bayern Munich will knock them out. And if that happens, then obviously that's going to strengthen Liverpool's Premier League case.
They'll be quite pleased not to be in the FA Cup or the League Cup.
Big time.
I think if they, yeah, you're right. If they get knocked out, then I wonder whether it will become much easier for them. I still got my money on Liverpool. I just think that, you know, they would need to drop points in quite a few games because I don't think City will win every remaining game, and I kind of think that they will grind it out.
Liverpool, they haven't. I don't know. It's kind of one of those weird ones where. They played their full team against Palace as strong as they could. They had Milner at right back, who got roasted by Zaha for the first goal. Otherwise, it's first choice, and it's particularly that front three. They, at home, I think, are going to be a really, really difficult team to get past because there's a lot of belief around there right now. They're going to have a few games against the top six, basically, and that, I feel like that's going to settle their season. It's hard to see some of the smaller teams taking points off them because they seem to have worked out how to break the kind of low block. You know, Roy Hodgson, you could have guessed how Roy Hodgson was going to set out at Anfield, and he did. And Palace basically scored one on the counter, which was a very good counter-attacking goal, but it needed to be because they were being pressed to oblivion. One from a set piece, and then the last one was stoppage time, consolation goal, essentially. I only just realised, looking at the league table, that would have been Tottenham's first draw of the season. Harry Winks hadn't popped up to score late. But looking at the title race, do you think Tottenham are still part of that, either of you, or do you think that's just gone, exactly, right? It's only 5 points, but that's nine City, to Liverpool.
The fact is, City and Liverpool's squads are much, much better. They've got fewer injuries. Like, Spurs will kind of slowly leak points.
It's a four-way battle for third and fourth, I think.
Spurs will get sucked into that third, fourth battle.
Magic of the Cups coming up. We've got Thursday, Chelsea Spurs, as we discussed, in the Carabao. Then Friday night, the FA Cup magic begins. Arsenal, Man United. Luke, you're going to be at that one.
Ooh, me too.
So are you, Jack. Biggest game of the weekend, so just give us a couple of thoughts on that before it goes.
It's interesting because it's like a good test of where these two teams, which will probably finish pretty near each other in the Prem, where they are in their development. What I was thinking about this, and I'm going to write a piece about this week, is that United seem to have, within the course of the last like month or so, they have completely rediscovered this sort of lost identity by reappointing Solskjaer, whereas Arsenal, whose manager has been in place for a lot longer, still are in this kind of wilderness of not really knowing who they are or what they're trying to do. Which suggests that maybe like solutions are not as difficult as we think, or maybe United seem to have solved their problems far quicker than Arsenal have.
A question we might need to address at the end of every podcast up until the end of the season. If you're Ed Woodward at the moment, who are you hiring at the end of the season? Solskjaer, are you going to try and go for Pochettino still?
Well, I think, like, there's been some reporting this week or last week saying that United staff and players are increasingly behind Solskjaer. It's difficult when these things develop momentum. It's very difficult to be the kind of party pooper who says, you know what, guys, this thing you're getting really excited about, you're not going to have it because I'm actually going to stick with my original plan. That becomes like, there comes a point where it is politically difficult not to keep it. We saw it with Di Matteo at Chelsea 2012, who after he won the Champions League. We saw it to a lesser extent when Liverpool hired King Kenny on a short-term basis. And then they had to sack him to get in Brendan, and like they had to deal with lots of like outcry at that So it's tough. Like,
can you think of an example where it's not happened? The only one I can think of where there's been like a successful caretaker manager who's like ended the season with a bit of success after a torrid season and then hasn't got the job's Hiddink, but then he didn't want it.
Yeah, with Hiddink it was always...
They were trying to get him, but he just never...
I think with Hiddink it was so...
Solskjaer would cut off his right arm for the job.
So
yeah.
With Hiddink it was so known that it was only ever going to be a six-month thing. I'm trying to think of other like...
I can't think of anyone being kind of spectacularly overlooked.
Rafa 2012-13 at Chelsea won the Europa League. Mm, then Jose came back in. But I think with Rafa it was like... Everybody knew at that point that Chelsea were trying to get Jose or even Guardiola, weren't they? Obviously, Guardiola gone to Bayern.
Yeah, yeah.
By that point, but everybody knew that Chelsea had like higher ambitions than Rafa, and also like the fans hated him in such a way that it would have been very difficult to keep him.
You couldn't have kept him on; it would have been impossible.
He did brilliantly, finishing top four and winning the Europa League, and I will always stand for Rafa Benitez. But
in the same way that you would stand for Jose Mourinho winning the Europa League at United.
No. I'm a good person.
in solidarity with Eva, you wouldn't. Any other business, please, from the world of football before we move on to next week? I am...
Some juicy cup games as well. Millwall, Everton, Portsmouth, QPR.
I'm in Munich on Sunday for a Champions League scouting mission. Cool. Bayern take on Stuttgart. We're going to have, obviously, all the Friday night action, I guess. It's going to be quite a big game, Arsenal United. And then Saturday, there's a ton of fourth round ties, the pick of which, I would say, is probably Wimbledon West Ham. That's quite an interesting one. The FA Cup kickoff times, by the way, you know, the Premier League gets a lot of criticism for being overly corporate and inconsiderate to fans. The FA Cup kickoff times are terrible.
Yeah, so the FA, I think last year, I did a piece about this, but last year, I think, signed a big new juicy TV deal with foreign TV, which was worth a lot more money, and that money has led to them like doubling all the prize money throughout the FA Cup. But this means that, you know, they are bending over backwards to suit foreign broadcasters. And, you know, we obviously, like you say, people do accuse the Premier League of this, but now the FA Cup is doing it even more than the Bucks is.
Friday night, you've got two games, Bristol City Bolton and Arsenal Man United.
I hate the FA Cup so much.
There's now like the kind of lesser used Sunday evening slot.
Yeah, so Saturday you've got 12:30, and then you've got a load of 3 o'clocks, and you've got a 5:30, and a 7:45, which is Wimbledon West Ham. Then on Sunday, you've got Crystal Palace Tottenham at 4. Me. And then Chelsea versus Sheffield Wednesday is a 6 p.m. kickoff on a Sunday evening. I don't know if you've ever tried getting a train home to Sheffield on a Sunday evening.
Won't somebody think of the fans?
Barnet versus Brentford is Monday night.
Sunday 6 p.m. is such a bad time to have a football match. I can't.
If you're going to do it, though, make Palace Tottenham the 4 o'clock one. Make that the 6 o'clock one, because they're both in London, at least. It's a tube journey or a train journey. Mm. You know, it's fully inconsiderate.
Nobody wants to be getting in from football at, like, 11 p.m. midnight on a Sunday night.
Really astonishingly simple.
Is this the gammon take, though? Should one kind of prioritise in home fans first?
Well,
the gammons?
I know you're very concerned.
Are we the
backup? I know you're very concerned with the gammon take, but you've literally just said, while being recorded, that you hate the FA Cup.
No, I do hate the FA Cup. Also, can I just say,
is this a millennial thing? You know, like, you know, young people hate the FA Cup.
Mug off the cup advertising campaign. That is also like the worst.
That's not a campaign, isn't it?
No, that's what the BT are using to push the coverage.
No, they've stopped using
hashtag don't mug off the cup.
What was the one where they were using Donald Trump to advertise?
Oh, that was last season.
That was really bad. That's actually the worst thing.
Guys, we need a really popular political figure to help promote our... Yeah, Trump will do it. Yeah, he's the guy, the one that gasses children at the border. And on that note... sorry, did you want to say anything else?
One more point about Huddersfield.
A few more thoughts about Jonas Lossell. I was hoping that in the absence of Miguel Delaney, this would be like a pro FA Cup pod, but I really regret the fact that Luke has dragged it into an anti FA Cup pod.
Luke's desperation to be. Last time he was on here, I believe he was shilling for Jose Mourinho, the now sacked Manchester United manager who disgraced himself. you know, it's fresh from disgracing himself again. Thank you to Luke Brown.
Thank you.
Jack Pitbrook, thank you for coming in. I hope you enjoyed your week off. You look refreshed and restored.
I do enjoy January.
And I can only hope that that is reflected in your emotions in the next couple of weeks as we take on a difficult part of the season, including, but not limited to, deadline day, which is coming up. So be ready. Until then, as always, I remind you to sign up for Indie Minds. You can go to independent.co.uk/podcast. And I think it's only about 15p a day. You get all these exclusive extras, including long reads, ebooks, and a load of other stuff that I can't remember. So please sign up to that. Otherwise, stay tuned to Indie Football, independent.co.uk/sport, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, etc., etc. And we will talk to you next Monday. Thank you and goodbye.